spend these dollars. I'm not going to read them all ad nauseum, but you see the resources. Usually if there are 3,000 or 4,000 resources you see at the front, you know, 3010, for example, all the way down to 4203, those tend to be federal restricted dollars. That's the key moniker there. Those are federal that are come from the national system itself. So it's federal dollars that we have. And it makes a very small portion of our budget. When you get into the 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, and 9,000, for example, down towards the bottom, those are the state of California restricted funds. Okay? And if you get really, I'll go back to the 9,000, those are really programs that we receive locally that may have some restrictions on them that we've set up. So that kind of gives you a breakdown of the restricted dollars according to the type of program that are there. And so what we're going to do is we're going to go through some of these categories just a little more deeply to give you an idea of what those dollar amounts and those balances are. So for example, Title I is resource 3010, which is a federal resource, has approximately a balance of $175,000 that we see that we're going to receive. And what are some of the key components that make up Title I? You know, it's federal funding aiming to reduce the achievement gap, intended to meet, of course, low-achieving students in our high-poverty schools, and the type of services, as you're well aware, supplemental support, extended learning time, rental involvement, covers, these are the type of expenditures that we can do. These are the expenditures that, on an annual basis, the auditors will come and the external auditors will come and spot check to make sure. And then we, as a district, next year have a fortunate experience to be up on a very extensive audit of our categorical programs that comes in conjunction by the county and the oversight piece. So they'll come in even more deeper, terribly, I apologize, just much more intensively on the district to make sure we are following the pieces. Okay. Are we coding the right employees? Do we have the right percentage attached to the work that they're doing? Program monitoring type piece there. For 2015-16, a balance of 10% also had to be held for supplemental educational services. Okay. And so this is our last year having to withhold these funds as a district because we are exiting the program from a federal level. So because of that, we can then continue to expand, in this case, you know, just under $100,000, as we see will really benefit our students within our system, within our schools. And again, a lot of this is being used to fund classroom supplies, technology that will directly affect those students that fall into this program. That gives you just a kind of a definition of Title I and where we're allocating those types of funds. Medi-Cal billing option, you may hear that, which is resource 5640. Again, this is one that's a combination of federal revenue provided by the Department of Health, but it's for providing Medi-Cal services to our population base, to those students that are eligible for those. So again, these type of funds, and many of our federal funds, must be used to supplement versus supplant services. Okay. Must be done in addition to basically what we call the base program in our school system. Now, a lot in this particular case for Medi-Cal are done to use for services related to the physical and mental health of the students. This is a program, as you can guess, especially from the federal and state level, has been decreasing consistently in funding. Even though we're providing that same level or increased number of services, they're reducing the funding for this program. So our commitment, and right now you see, oh, it's a high dollar amount. Why are we? Because we're using that particularly to continue supporting salaries and benefits to provide services to these students. Health clerks in schools, learning assistants, instructional technicians, you know, school nurses as far as these particular services.
Can I just jump in to say, talk about why there's a large balance there too? An even larger balance when I was in Ed Services. We were bringing in more money for a period of time. Like Jim says, the reimbursement rate is lower now, and we didn't have, there was someone ill in the department that was supposed to be coordinating the committee that has to oversee these dollars. And when Stacy came on as special ed director, we reconvened the committee to begin to use these dollars for case management for kids, which is what they have to be used. And we decided to put money into some salaried positions to support kids with school nurse, IT. We have some behavior assistants here learning behavior assistance for the elementary schools with the goal, but we knew that we couldn't allocate all the money out if we were going to put it in salary benefits because what we have coming in revenue each year isn't as high as what the salary costs are. So we intentionally kept a reserve in this account, the committee did, so that we could keep these positions for a longer period of time.
Is it appropriate to ask questions now?
Could you speak into the microphone, please?
Yes, it's okay to ask questions.
So I've been wondering about this $559,000 amount, which remains $559,000. So correct me if I'm wrong, but you're saying that next year we're going to need to provide within these services positions that will cost more than we have budgeted for next year, and we'll be able to dip into this money next year to make that good.
I'm going
to
let Angela explain it.
And the follow-up question, I could be on the wrong track, forgive me. What would the rate of dipping into this $600,000 be? Is it $100,000 a year for the next 5 years? What are you projecting?
No, that's a great question, because the $559,000 is representing some reimbursements that were owed to us from years prior. When we look at the actuals, our actual footprint for Medi-Cal with a part-time nurse with some additional health clerk is about $180,000, and that's what we can expect to be reimbursed. So what we should be looking at is an operating budget of about $200,000, give or take. We're going to need to make some decisions about how we spend this down, but we don't want to put more positions into this because this is a falsely inflated number right now. It represents reimbursements that were owed to us. Our actual budget is closer to $180,000 to $200,000.
In this particular balance, we received actually like 3 years of reimbursements at one time. So we weren't paid at all for a 3-year period because there was negotiations going on between the state and the reimbursement agency, and at what rate would they reimburse the districts for the work that already had been completed. But we still, at that time, were providing services that were being conducted on behalf of the students.
And that happened at the same time that we also didn't have a committee in place for a year. So that's why we have a bit more buildup in the reserve.
Can I just interject a process piece? So do you want questions while we go, or do you want us to wait? How would you like to do this?
You know, we broke it out some of these resources.
Okay.
So I can do.
So we'll stop kind of at intermediate spots.
Absolutely.
And I'm just clarifying that during a study session, I'm off duty, right? So that the presenters get lights. So, is that right?
You don't have to say. In
okay.
Other words.
It is now.
Yes. Then I get to talk.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
that's why I like
absolutely.
It that way. Thanks.
Will you Patty have that item? Okay. Or is that Jeremy? I'm sorry.
It's me. Mine is just trying to wrap my mind around this. This was basically a windfall of monies owed to us, just because of different circumstances that. But I do remember that we have brought on more in order to service the needs of students. And because I don't have a historical knowledge any longer than I've been here, is this operating procedures happen amongst the state and the reimbursement rate of what has happened previously. So should we be planning or knowing that sometimes they may go toe-to-toe, this is just the behavior of those in charge of the monies? Okay, that's just something to keep in mind. Thank you.
When I first saw the Medi-Cal billing come on here, because I used to work as a school psychologist, I thought of the materials that we used to purchase from that money. But that isn't talked about here, and I'm wondering why this is on the materials and budget and supplies list, because it's really all people.
It's dependent upon, because what the action been placed here at Santa Cruz City Schools, in many cases, when these dollars weren't actually completely budgeted out, they may have been held in the 4,000 supply budget line as a way of holding it. See, this is exactly because it's one of the most, you don't We don't, I haven't placed it into salaries and benefits when there have been individuals within that operation. So it may have been held or budgeted, shown in the 4,000s as the holding spot for the dollars.
And also, we technically can't spend these dollars on the assessments. It's how we used to spend the money on the assessments, and we're not supposed to.
I'm having a hard time understanding why we wouldn't then move the money, like why that's sitting in the books and supplies category, if in fact it's been moved to people and we were never supposed to spend it on supplies to start with.
No, well, that's exactly where we're doing it now, is to actually allocate the expenses out to where they're being incurred, as you just mentioned. But as Superintendent Monroe mentioned, if there wasn't a direction of exactly how we were going to expend these dollars, okay, as a district, the holding fund was the 4,000 materials and supply line.
So when you see a 4,000 materials and supply, you're in the question mark category. It's like there's not a decision. There's not a clear decision.
Not
so you
in
put
the past,
it there.
That's correct. So what we're really intent and what we're working on with my team right now is really assessing, okay, what's been our activity in material supplies? What's been our activity in services? What's been our activity in salary and benefits? To see exactly where we should be budgeting these dollars to where the expense may occur. And that's some of the things that we're continuing to clarify as we utilize and spend the dollars down and based upon direction, you know, from the board of how we budget these pieces. So we then, as we talked about earlier in the year, we would see, you know, at first interim, $1 million budget line in supplies, and at second interim, it dropped down to $300,000. Where that $600,000 go, it went to where we actually began to budget the dollars to meet the expense that we had. You know, it kind of conforms to one of the reports that you approve at every meeting are our budget transfers. You know, we take the money from a particular budget line and transfer it to an expense, but it could be based upon the state accounting system, a different object code across that stream. And so based upon that, we're moving the monies, and it's consistent across many districts in the state. The holding spot for these dollars, if we're not sure really where, isn't the supply lines. It's very liquid. You know, it's controllable. Sites don't really have the ability to go in really and change the salaries and benefits. Those are what are negotiated and agreed to. But you can then determine, you know, I may need to send someone to PD versus buy a book or buy supplies. And I want to send a teacher to a professional development class. It's a whole different expenditure based upon where we originally have it.
So just to clarify, that means that the money, when it's spent down, is not necessarily all spent, or is it? Does it shift over to another budget category, or does it stay in that category and get spent?
The answer to all your questions are yes. Because if it's spent within that category as we budgeted, yes, it'll stay in there. If we have to switch it to a different service or a different expense, we then remove it from that particular line and then change it to the appropriate expenditure source.
So it's helpful to know that that's what all those budget transfers are. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's helpful to make that connection.
Yeah.
It would really be helpful to kind of have a flow line idea of how within a given year, which money's moving where. Because I think it would be helpful with the feeling like there's a whole lot of money sitting there.
Right. Which is exactly why we're discussing it tonight.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Sheldon.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate the fact that you talk about this category as being plastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, for example, and I'm quoting, funds can be used for a variety of services relating to the physical and mental health of our students. And then I scroll down to learning assistance. If the board decided, for example, that these funds might be best used for Life Lab learning assistance at all the elementaries, or to help pay back, is that being too liquid, in your words, or plastic?
Because there still has a restricted resource. It still has to meet. It's almost. So we talked about earlier, think about an oversight committee. It has to be spent specifically on the language of that revenue. And this revenue for Mendicare is specifically for those eligible students that have created the reimbursement and for services related to physical and mental health.
I'm going to have you have Angela speak to that more specifically, because there's really, really specific language that the committee has to follow and then agree, vote on items. That's the language of the law also says there has to be a subcommittee in place before any of these dollars can be spent. The committee has to vote on the expenditures, and they have to be in alignment with the language. And I'm going to have Angela talk to you about the language a little bit.
Yeah, just that it did, because I think we can imagine there are a lot of students that need additional support. There's a lot of needs within our schools. We're audited annually to ensure that we're meeting the criteria set by the state, which includes these services are for students who do not have an IEP. It's very much about case management. So a great example is our behavior learning assistants that are working with students who have not yet been identified as needing an IEP, but maybe headed in that direction. So we've had to work with understanding this better, because initially I think we were all thinking this is great to have some extra money. And then to go to Chris's point about the committee has representatives, teachers, we have speech therapists, psychologists, so it's a committee that is able to put forward both the proposals and then to review those proposals using that criteria. So it's very restrictive.
Kathy?
Very, very quickly, so I think I'm hearing your point. I wish I wasn't, but I think you're being clear. In other words, if it serves a larger group, but the group of targeted individuals is within that larger group, that doesn't count. It has to only serve that targeted group.
Yeah.
Too bad.
I know.
Well, that's the way it is.
But it's allowed us to increase our nursing footprint, and it's allowed us to put in assistance to support kids who are struggling in the classrooms,
right,
which does support other students
right
in the classrooms where that has been the case. And we're using the behavior support instructional text in our elementary schools.
Patty?
My question goes more in the lines of, in educational accounting, it sounds that it's standard practice to leave this monies that has not yet been identified in some place that's liquid, and we call it books and supplies. Why do we not have an accounting piece into a restricted, not yet noted dollars to go? So I see it here now. Did it come straight to this category from when the funds came, or did it go into supplies, and did I not, I mean, because I'll be honest, and I've talked about this, when we have budget transfers, you know, we have our resource number, and then we'll have another number, and then we'll have another, you see them day in and day out, and so you know where they're going. But I don't feel comfortable sometimes when I'm like, do I actually know where these dollars have come from out of books and supplies and are actually going and where they were earmarked? To answer those questions, that's the oversight piece. I'm not an accountant. I could imagine it would become very cumbersome, but when dollars come in that aren't necessarily books and supplies, and we know that they're going to go somewhere, but they have not been tagged for salaries or benefits because we haven't hired somebody, is that the only place to hold the money? That was a long way to that question, sorry.
That's a good question.
Well, the key phrase that you used in that was the state accounting system.
Yes.
Especially with restricted dollars.
Okay.
Because as revenues come in, some of the programming at the state level wants you to balance it out to zero,
okay,
especially on a restricted side. So we attempt to project salaries, benefits, services. Maybe we don't know exactly what type of supplies are going to be purchased, or if it's going to be, say, a computer or technology system, which may have a different, you know, string to it. So we try to keep it where the category that fits the best as we move throughout the year and is necessary. And there may be a change. You know, one, there could be a change from the funding from the state throughout the year. And secondly, that there may be a changing based upon the needs of the school site. For example, from, you know, we put in supply, but maybe we determine that we'd rather send 5 instructors or learning assistants to train, because it falls within the language. That's a whole different expense side that we want to move the dollars to from there. So it's tied to both. And on the unrestricted side, when we don't budget it out, that's what basically falls to the bottom with our ending fund balance to meet that minimum 3% recommended requirement.
And if I could just follow up, so restricted, they want zero balance on both sides of the sheets, in to out. So the out would be still sitting in whatever category we put it, which is most broad to be books and supplies, because it somewhat will fit the restricted category eventually. I mean, knowing that we were going in this direction and the money came later.
Right. And okay. The second part of your question, just to kind of answer maybe some other questions, is with the transfers when we move the funds along, mm-hmm. that's one of the responsibilities that my department has, to make sure it's coded properly. How is that followed up? One, by making sure that we code it properly according to the state coding. Two, the annual audits, which then come in and select particular restricted and unrestricted funds to review.
Such as the Crown Horoth at the end of the year?
The Crown Horoth at the end of the year on an annual basis. Thirdly, when you're also selected, and Mr. Frank Wells will be the lucky recipient of this next year in Angela's position, to be the lead on the categorical program monitoring at the local level from the County Office of Ed to even do more insight to make sure that we're managing the programs correctly.
Okay.
So that becomes part of the check and balance as we make these changes to you. If not, you would then potentially see greater audit findings at the end of the year. You know, maybe with another human element or changes we have to make to the program.
Okay.
Ms. Sheehan.
Whatever it was that Jeremy got, I think I must have missed. So I have to get this clear again. You're saying that it can't, the funds have to be specifically used, but the health clerks aren't just specifically used. And I don't think the school nurses, although it may be the school nurses now, but that I thought that it went the other way, that we supplemented, not supplanted, and so I got lost there.
You're right. So what we could have been a little more specific with this is that we are providing health clerks and school nurses as out of the general fund, and then we provide supplemental services. So we have an additional part-time nurse who's really doing more case management, in particular in the high schools. And then we've extended the hours for health clerks at two of our high schools for students who have with students with diabetes who need ongoing care. So it's not to say that all of those positions are coming out of this fund, but those are those supplemental, case-managed, one-to-one kinds of supplies.
So can you use the same person, or do you have to add a new person?
You know, we offered it to existing health clerks because we really did want to use. Uh-huh. So, and we were able to do that at one of the sites. We were able to extend the hours.
Okay, thank you. I'm feeling a little less crazy.
Okay. The next one we have here is restricted lottery. As you know, the lottery was the end-all be-all to save California schools from financial disaster in our educational system. Of course, there's a little bit touch of facetiousness in that statement. But in this case, the restricted lottery funds are required to be spent on instructional materials. And here we have a balance of projected to end the year about $107,000. And these funds have been used to supplement the instructional materials block grant, which is no longer in existence. So right now in reviewing it, you know, we receive $107,000 a year in restricted lottery. Imagine our instructional material need for a district of 7,000 students. So in some ways, we have been reserving the balance in this fund to assist with, say, a math adoption or an ELA adoption, which is definitely going to run more than the $107,000 we'll receive on an annual basis. So this comes into the planning projection, which maybe we have a carry forward balance in this particular fund over a mini annual period.
The other thing that we do is there are consumable books that have to be purchased for our elementary schools every year. So we save that money that comes in. We're going to make purchases right now for next year's consumable requirements. So that they arrive by August. So we do it, we have that money comes in the fall, but we have, in this particular case, we have to save it. Mm-hmm. So we'll have those materials to start for next year's students in the fall. So that right now is the time that with purchase order close, they're just closing all the elementary schools of doing all their counts. And in this case, we're not going to be purchasing the consumables that we had for the last math adoption. We're going to be purchasing both books and consumables for the new math adoption. So it said in the first year will be more than ongoing years, but within our elementary school district, and it seems now with all new adoptions, there are annual costs. It's not just buying textbooks one time.
Sheila.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
I'm done.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry, Ms. Allison.
Can we use lottery funds to pay for textbook clerks?
No. Cannot be used for salaries.
Okay, but the Medi-Cal can be used for salaries.
Yes.
Okay.
That's why departments work together to make sure we're following the rules. Mm-hmm. So it's something that's very difficult. You're challenged to remember every single rule for every single program. Mm-hmm. So we're always bouncing the ideas of what we can, and then validating it. You know, my department will call the auditors. You know, they don't just come once a year to audit. They're also using the resource throughout the year to make sure that we're going to expend the dollars correctly. Or is that piece of it? Or utilizing other resources out in other districts.
So, I mean, we're probably going to spend a considerable amount of money on the new math adoption. And we really need a plan for making sure that we can not lose those books and monitor those books correctly through textbook clerks.
That's like a little advertisement here.
So local programs. On the local programs. Oh, sorry, Ms. Patty.
I just wanted to comment on the lottery. I know that Jessica's here. I want to put it out there that the public seems to be under the misnomer that the lottery has solved all school programs. And when for Santa Cruz City Schools, we can see the number right there. And so thank you for that.
Local programs, again, I mentioned this earlier, were our 9,000 resource codes. And you say, oh my goodness, there's $1.3 million in this local program. But in many cases, you will see what this encompasses. We talked about our last board or meeting, the facility use fees. We collect these locally because of individuals or external groups utilizing our facilities. So it goes into this specific resource, so we can then allocate the expenditures that are associated with this to maintain our facilities. Medical administrative activities, also known as MA. You know, these are particular reimbursements related to activities, again, for the physical and mental health that we can maintain in a local resource. And what have we done with this? Trauma-informed training, positive behavior instructional services reap the benefit of this piece. Counseling books, intervention materials, where we've seen the expenses for this piece. And that is the continual path that we want to use these resources for, so we can continue these services for our students that have these needs. The Microsoft technology rebate, you know, there was a settlement with Microsoft where we received about $170,000. We purchased technology to replace antiquated teacher laptops. And we've fully expended these funds purely on technology as part of this whole Microsoft settlement that came through the state. So that's now at a zero balance. So now replacing these new purchased laptops will have to come a plan from us. But it allows us at least to do this at one point to really affect, hopefully, the learning environment. Their student fees fall under this that are optional classroom fees. Testing, parking, a lost book, and then the lost book fees would go back to purchase, you know, some of those books that have been lost and we've collected upon that piece. The Wells Fargo discretionary grant, again, which Superintendent Monroe alluded to earlier, we received $25,000, $5,000 grant for each secondary school. You know, so it would go into a local restricted resource to be spent on what it was set up to do for supplies, et cetera, within those sites. Other programs, you know, the Santa Cruz Warriors Read to Achieve, insurance claim, the Cookson Family Grant. These all fall under local dollars, which appear to be unrestricted, but they still come with certain restrictions of how to expend them. Donations, you know, in different areas. Member Sheldon.
You're showing a over $1 million balance in this fund, $1,092,000. This was one of those where I was thinking, if we can expect a certain amount of money coming in each year, from facility use fees, et cetera, et cetera. There is some room here to spend some of this cash. Is it necessary to keep $1 million balance at the end of the year in this category?
It comes with strings attached. Mm-hmm. It's not totally unrestricted.
Well, for example, facilities use fees, I understand that, go on, talk me out of turn.
Donations. Donations will come in with specific avenues to be spent as support comes from the donor themselves. So we have to put it into a local income, but still tied to the specific expense or the restraints placed upon it. So again, where do we know exactly? We're not sure. It may be a supplier, maybe, you know, whatever they designate it to be. So again, we attempt to budget within those lines and then expend it out according to what has been set forth by the donor in this particular case. So we try to use facilities back to facilities now.
So short and sweet, no unrestricted funds within local programs, within 9010.
Correct. But pretty much they come with restrictions.
That's it.
Yeah. Ms. Sheila, then Ms. Patty. And then Ms. Malton, would you have a comment?
Can I just clarify one thing really fast?
Yeah.
So this is a balance that we have. Some of this money has been spent. You said the Microsoft has been spent.
Yeah.
So it's not that this money is sitting there and not spent. This is not what we're going to have at the end of the year. I mean, there's been money that's been taken
out. This is
out.
The point in time that some will be spent, and then some may be replenished. Mm-hmm. So that's why we close the books and show all the balancing in there also. Yes.
So I think what Jeremy's asking is this, maybe not.
We show $1 million balance in this fund.
Yes.
So is that taking out the Microsoft money already on top of that? Microsoft money is on top of that?
If we go back just a couple of slides, you'll see here we present the very first one. Here's the budget. Here's what's encumbered.
Right.
Then we show another encumbrance as of March 31st. And then right now what we have is a balance remaining. So when Jeremy goes through, he'll see, oh, there's $1 million in the 9010 local program.
I'm getting excited.
Right, exactly. And there's a certain way to come with restrictions also. Or the donation line, there's $444,000 right now. But those are specific requests from the donors on which to expend.
And I'm going to say that a lot of this has already been spent.
Right.
Because, and I know it's not, like, a lot. The MA dollars came in late. The MA dollars came in the last, those came across my desk in the last 8 weeks. So they came in late. So we have, there were schools working to meet purchase order deadlines, or some of this money even just came in. The Wells Fargo money came in recently. And I know the teachers have a plan for expending them, and I know that that sites have been working in the last few weeks to make PO deadlines to spend that dollars. So a lot of this, although it's a point in time, and a lot of these monies that are coming from special places came in later this year. So, and we actually got reimbursed for MA activities that went back several years, because there were 2 years that we didn't get any MA dollars, and we just got them. I want to say it was 6 or 7 weeks ago. Yeah. So it's a point in time, and things are always moving. Always moving.
Very fluid.
Ready?
Sheila.
Question.
And thank you for saying that, Chris, because one of the things you look at is when 331 and it still hasn't been spent, you're like, hello, the year's almost through. The Medical Administrative Activities Fund, where does that come from? What's the source?
Time accounting that is done at the school sites for time that we spend. When I was a principal, I'd do time accounting. It's arduous, and we're all going to roll it. It's crazy, and then you have an auditor come back and say you didn't do it right. But every time I had a conversation with a family when I was in a conference that included a conversation about counseling, medical coverage, medical services, any of those times I had a conversation with a family about that,
right,
I logged my time. And the MA services, or Medi-Cal then reimburses the district
for my time when I'm sharing information with families about medical resources that may be available to them. And we started doing this accounting with our site administrators, with our school nurses, with our
school psychologists,
health clerks,
about 8 years ago.
Psychologist.
And it was about 8 years ago because it was a way for us because we were doing these things, having those conversations all the time. So it was a way for us to begin to bring in some somewhat discretionary revenue, as revenue to meet those kinds of needs, support service needs to families. And we all learned how to do this. It takes a lot of time. You have to follow up with the auditors. And then, you know how hard this is.
Yeah.
And then they stopped paying us. And so, but it turns out it was worth us continuing to have faith the process would work because we just got a set of payments in the last 2 months that went back for a couple of years, auditing a couple of years. So it's a way that the state.
Well, that's my question was, what was the source? Because I was trying to figure out why it wasn't with the other Medi-Cal stuff, if that was the source, because it sounded familiar to me.
So Ma and Medi-Cal are different. They're similar, but they're different.
So you don't know if it comes from Medi-Cal, because that's federal, right? Or it could, no. Medi-Cal is California.
Medi-Cal.
Yeah, so you don't know if that's where it comes from?
No, we do when we receive the dollars from the state, based upon, as Superintendent Monroe mentioned, the time accounting piece of it. And the reason why there were 2 or 3 years in arrears, because one, there was a strong debate from the sources managing it and the reimbursement for what the time and services were really being done. We would log it, well, no, you weren't doing that. Yes, we were. And so they came to a settlement so to pay us back, but they also did it at a reduced rate and will continue to reduce that rate of reimbursement for these services at the school district level. But that specific, those dollars then are accounted under local programs versus that Medi-Cal program, which sounds very similar,
because what?
Under a different resource.
Why is it counted as a local program rather than a Medi-Cal program?
So they're both local programs. They're both different funding sources, even though they say the same thing, or sound the same. Medi-Cal versus...
Medi-Cal.
The administrative
activity. Administrative. They go to similar services. Their restrictions are similar, but they're different programs that are accounted for differently.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
And it requires us to know a lot of different things and follow a lot of different roles and be really careful about how we... And in this particular case, the Medi-Cal monies are overseen by committee. The MAMI dollars are overseen by student services. And we work with a firm that helps us make sure we do our accounting correctly and that we make expenditures accurately within the guidelines that allow us to. So really, this was a way during the recession years that we found that we could bring in revenue for work we were doing legitimately. This was work that we were doing and bring in some more resources to support kids, which is why we all learned how to do it.
Drive you crazy.
Thank you. Number three.
My question goes back to the facilities use fees. When we collect those, I know that when I look at the sheets, and I actually looked at a different district to see if we're aligned and what happens, I think our facilities are a huge value, and I think the community really comes to us for them, and I want to make sure that everybody's on page to the value and that we're not overcharging or undercharging. But we have a piece where janitorial services are minimum two hours at a rate. Is that considered a stipend, or do we move that money from there into salaries and benefits? So we charge, so if I'm Joe Schmo and I want the field hockey field and I rent it for an hour and I'm a private entity, I pay this hourly fee, but I am always charged according to what I read, if I'm reading it correctly, for janitorial cover, which is hard. Sometimes these groups are not necessarily on page. And does that money go into a salary and benefit, or does it go into a stipend area, or am I completely lost to where that money comes from? Or it gets to go?
If you're in school finance accounting, we're all going to be lost at some point of the day. As we begun or continue this process of accounting for services and time and for the rental of facilities, our goal is to tie the resources back to the expense.
Okay.
That is our goal that we do. And that's one reason why really this is the first year we're breaking it out exactly to show those costs and how we're recuperating them as far as that. So our goal is to tie it back to the actual salary and benefit.
Okay.
So that's one of the things that we're doing now to account for that piece. So we're working on that, and we're continually auditing that to make sure we cover those expenses.
So that expense, just for me to be clear, is that if I'm Mr. Toscano up at Soquel High, who is there all the time, and I give those 2 hours of work because whatever events happen, I don't just get a... If I were to get a stipend from it, does that help the retirement fee of that employee also because they were hours worked? Or... Is it like an hourly on top of their hourly?
It's salary.
Okay, it is a salary.
It's salary for the employees that are called in.
Okay, so it does go towards the retirement.
Absolutely does. That's why we provide the rate for that piece.
So, and we charge an overtime rate?
Yeah.
To people who rent the facility if they're going to be using it during hours where we would be required to hold the custodian overtime.
Okay.
Mark Sheldon?
Tough question. Are our facility use fees in line with other districts? Are we, as Patty mentions, overcharging or undercharging? What do you think?
That's one thing that Mr. Miller and I are continuously looking at within the departments. Right now, and he's been doing some studies to validate what our expenses are tied to it. We are very much in line with districts across the state. And what many districts are doing now, what many didn't do in the past, was actually accumulating charge for the custodial people kind of came along with it as a separate piece. So we're very similar. Are they going to be equal across the board? There's different costs, but I think we're very, very competitive as far as that goes. And I don't feel that there is an overcharge going on, but we are continually evaluating. That's one of the goals that we want to do, hopefully before the end of the year, is review that to make sure we're still in line.
And the law requires that we can only charge our costs.
Okay, donations. Again, this just continues to expand the conversation of this particular resource. It's used to track donations, variety of sources, and then they must be used really for the purposes of the donor. Restrictions can be to an educational purpose or specific classroom, as we've all seen. You know, Wells Fargo were very generous recently. The Warriors Read to Achieve programming we call up, and majority of the donations are made to specific sites for specific programs, and this is where, again, the optional outdoor science camp fees are collected, and we'll see a high balance right now because we're just beginning to receive the invoices from the County Office of Ed to actually expend for the bills associated with the science camp. So at the point in time, as Superintendent Monroe alluded to earlier, there's going to be a balance because right now we're expending those as we close the books for the year and close for that piece. So that's a critical component. Allison.
So is this, this is like the holding spot for if a PTA decides to fundraise to pay an extra few hours for a Life Lab aid or whatever schools decide, are we sort of the mediator of that money? So the money comes in, we hold it, we pay the employees,
right.
And then at the, you know, I think it was the last meeting when we had layoffs, because those are donation-based positions that school sites can or might choose to do differently if they don't fundraise for them. Am I getting that right?
That's correct. Again, because it has to come, we have to pay the employee, which mm-hmm. is an employee of Santa Cruz City
right.
Schools, which is why, in many cases, especially during the height of the recent recession, many positions were eliminated. If it wasn't for the success here locally of mm-hmm. you know, parcel taxes, mm-hmm. donors, we were able to maintain many programs that many districts up and down the state had to eliminate. Mm-hmm. So these become holding spots for those type of programs, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
So that kind of gets to a lot of the topic around supplies and why we set up and use them and why we have to account for them a certain way. A lot of it's from direction from the state. They just updated the California State Accounting Manual. In case you get bored one night and have insomnia, you can look under CSAM, C-S-A-M, California State Accounting Manual. It's probably only about 2,000 pages that breaks down every single code along that stream that we do. Now, we refer to it. It's online, you know, to make sure we are actually utilizing the funds appropriately. It encompasses not just the general fund, but, you know, Fund 13, which is the old adult ed fund, cafeteria, Fund 14, deferred maintenance, Fund 21. All of those funds are defined within this California School Accounting Manual's reference point as far as that. So now we're going to get to the second part of the study session, which pertains to LCFF and property taxes. You know, we wanted some more clarification information of what property tax and how it affects our calculation. So I'm glad Ms. Coonerty's still feeling a little bit better to hang in there. Again, as we know, the primary funding source for schools is the LCFF, the Local Control Funding Formula Calculation. This determines both the base and supplemental funding for Santa Cruz City Schools and basically every school district in the county. For Santa Cruz City Schools, our funding currently is projected at $56 million. You know, one thing I think back to a short time ago when I first arrived, I was talking with Superintendent Monroe, you know, in her role and in your role, you're the board of directors of a $70 million nonprofit corporation. Literally. That's what we're doing. We are running a business of educating students. So it's nothing to be taken lightly of how we're utilizing the budgets, accounting for the funds, and expending them. This is a $70 million entity. You know, little Santa Cruz City Schools, if you want to call it that way. And so of this $70 million, $56 million is coming from the local control funding formula. This new revamp for the first time in 40 years calculation. So yeah, in fact, everybody, even in my position, is still new at this new process that took the place of a 40-year calculator. A key component of this is average daily attendance. Again, this is reiteration, but we used to call it, you know, cheeks in the seat. As students come, we get paid to educate them. And that's really one of the defining factors. We want our attendance ratios to be there. We want to offer programs that are going to draw on students to be here. That's how we get reimbursed for the services we're providing. The entitlement, though, is first funded by local taxes. That's one of the key components, is local taxes. And then it's state aid. And we have some visuals, hopefully, to assist you on that. And if the district has local taxes in excess, as our elementary side of the house is, it's different than when you have a local control funding with help by it. But of course, because of the economic recession, we have a fair share reduction being applied to our elementary district. This is just a little scenario. For example, property taxes from local taxes come in first, and in many cases, secondary district has revenue limit dollars from the state to provide that education for our students. On the elementary side, our property taxes exceed this calculated amount that we should receive as a district. So in this case, the bucket may flow over, but it's still for our benefit as the local taxes that exceed what we receive from a calculator based upon the taxes. So that piece of it comes into play here. Here are our property tax assumptions, what we've used consistently in the past. Either the bucket runneth over or we need state aid. That we know for sure. That's why we've stayed as two different districts at Santa Cruz City Schools. The fair share reduction is still there. You know, this is when I think we really got to get to our lobbyists to assist us on our local governmental. You know, we're being reduced $1.5 million a year, you know, from our dollars. We share our assumptions at every interim report with the Santa Cruz County Office of Ed. They are reimbursed to provide fiscal oversight for us as a district. So we may have some ideas, but we try to communicate what those are going to be as part of our assumptions to make sure we're on the same page. And I think we've really increased that relationship with the County Office of Ed, I think, in the last 16 months. I'm sure it was there before, but it's really one of the key goals I know I had, because I know I wouldn't be successful without a relationship with the County Office of Ed. We still disagree on things, believe us, but it's still necessary to have that positive relationship. So our current projections as elementary, we project an annual increase of 2% at the elementary side and 1.5% on the secondary side. And I think this is going to drive some of the slides for Ms. Coonerty's questions. Here's been the local tax growth for us at Santa Cruz City Schools going back really 10-11, 9-10 base year, all the way to 15-16. And one of the questions, I recall this question from my interview, you know, is how can you get better at projecting what our dollars are going to be? You know, when we get better relationships, and the county, not Office of Ed, but the county gets better too at giving us their projections. So it's a partnership. But you look at 2010-11, elementary taxes increased 1.17%. Secondary decreased 0.5%. 11-12, elementary increased a little over 0.6%. Yet, secondary increased 2.6%. In 12-13, the economy's coming back, right? All of a sudden, elementary increased 13.8% and secondary 9%. And I think that was the time when we were kind of teetering towards negative qualification, and then a lot of the tax dollars came in. I mean, how can you project, I mean, even the best person, to go from 0.6 to 13% in 1 year? I mean, I don't even think the county could project that piece itself in Santa Cruz. But then you go to 13-14, and it decreased from that year of growth a negative 0.35%. And secondary, well, they increased about 1.5. So just imagine if you had said, well, you know, we grew 13% last year. I think we're going to grow again. Let's put in 5%. And if you based our projections on that piece.
So, Jim, can I answer? So that's when I became superintendent in August, and we had to do an adjusted MYP in August when we found out that our property taxes had come in at a negative. And we were projecting a negative 3-year MYP, but then our estimates came in, our actuals came in October for the coming year, and there was a July adjustment, then our actuals came in
September, October,
and we were out of negative. So we went from being negative to being out of negative in several weeks' time.
So about, you know, as Chris mentioned, 3 or 4 months after we closed the fiscal year in June, as we're wrapping up the books, that's when we get our actual final figures for the previous year. So we're trying to get as close as possible to reject this, you know. And I don't want to say estimate because it makes you think like you're really going to get it right. It's really a projection based upon the information we have. For example, when we wrote this program just yesterday, and I haven't opened it up, we received the updated tax report for second interim just yesterday. So we'll use that as we prepare, you know, for the budget projections for next year to see where we're at. So then in 14-15, we went from a negative 0.35, well, then we grew 4% on the elementary side, and we grew 7% on the secondary side. And then we had 4.2 we're projecting right now, and 4.6 respectively. So over this time frame, we probably averaged a little over 3.5% on both sides of the district, which is why we use the conservative assumptions we do at 2% of elementary, just because you'll see that volatile system we have with the taxes pieces of it. And again, that's done in constant conjunction and communication with the County Office of Ed to make sure are we too conservative, are we not? And I think those are some of the comments you hear when Gene Gardner comes and joins us at the BAC, you know, to make sure those projections are there. So that just kind of gives you an idea of the local tax growth and where we are to make up that piece of why we use the assumptions that we do. And that's where we kind of ended up this piece of it. And again, like I said, we just received yesterday the updated, it's called the J-29 from the county perspective. So with that, I'm going to stop, and I think Sheila's first, and then Jeremy, and then Allison.
I just want to know, if the averages come out of 3.6 and 3.7, why do we have 2 and 1.5? Because we do a budget over 3 years, which means the averages are pretty good gauge. You wouldn't want to go way over the average, but the average is really helpful. So I'm trying to figure out why we undershoot it.
Based upon conversation with County Office of Ed, which provides fiscal oversight, and they report, after we send them our report to the state, that's their fiscal responsibility. And secondly, do we even want to project 3% if we're going to reduce negative 0.35? Do we want to project 3% or we're going to only grow 1.46? So what we're trying to do is find that conservative average that really tries to give a decent picture, but it's realistic, but still provides a little bit of growth. Could we get more aggressive? Yes, you could direct us to get more aggressive. I would shudder and I'd be very hesitant, just because I don't want to put us in that position of my fiscal responsibility to the district to show that growth when it's been so inconsistent at the county. If we were, you know, going 2 to 3 to 5 to 4, you know, along that line there, you're absolutely right, Sheila. I would say, yeah, we should project it at 3%. But when we're going from 1.17 to 0.6 to 13 to a negative 0.35 to 4, I mean, that becomes where I have to take the fiscal responsibility to make the best recommendations to you as a board. And that's one thing I just can't take that lightly, because I need to make sure that we're fiscally responsible, somewhat conservative, and make the, and then as we get those reports, we make the changes and report them to you as soon as we know them.
And so, I mean, I can understand, and you want to stay fiscally responsible, but there's never like 2 years in a row in which it's way down. And there's we have to do a 3-year budget. So what happens? What happens when we project 2 and we get 3 or 4?
We adjust it at the next interim report. So we, if we do
that's when the money comes in that we say we have more
correct
to spend.
So okay. When we get the report, for example, in September of this year, which is actually going to be as of June of 2016, that's when we'll get the final for the year. We'll then make that adjustment at first interim, which is as of an effective date of October 31st. And we'll adjust the revenue to show if we have an increase along that line there.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Thank you. Sean.
Two quick questions. One, it matters not at the secondary level what our annual taxes are, because we're not a basic aid district at that level. Correct me if I'm wrong.
There's still, that's a calculation that's used for the LCFF calculator. They'll take our taxes first as we determine the state aid.
But the state aid will always bring us up to a certain amount.
Based upon the calculator, yes.
So it goes up or it goes down, it doesn't matter. Will the state will increase or decrease that amount accordingly?
To meet our calculator, correct.
Okay.
That portion we got correct.
That's first question. Second question, what does a 4% increase at the elementary level translate to in dollars, more or less?
I think our annual for taxes.
Oh yeah, okay. So it's 4% of 20 million or something.
Correct.
Right. Okay, I get it. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. It's simple. Member Thompson.
I'm good.
Good. Yes. Member 3.
On that tax growth, does it take into account? Is the bottom line number taking into account the 1.5 million fair share reduction?
Our annual taxes.
So that's applied afterwards.
Correct.
Meaning, so I can use the
18.3 million for 1516.
Yes, but I can. My question being that if I were to look at these numbers and I wanted to apply some sort of formula from these numbers, I could take the increase or decrease, whatever the change is, mm-hmm. whatever the amount is, do the math, and then always, as the finalization of the number, take out the fair share reduction at the
correct.
End of the formula. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
And the percentage for that, just I'm sorry to call it, the percentage for fair share is 8%.
Oh, gosh. I'll get the exact percentage for you. I just know we average out to about $1.5 million a year. Yeah. It's about 8%. And that range there between 8 and 9%. Mm-hmm. Just like anything else the government giveth,
they
you
take it away. Mm-hmm.
Anyone? Oh, Sean, do you have another question?
No, No, I appreciate that. So it's an actual percentage and not a number.
Right.
I didn't know that.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah. So it's tied to that piece.
Got it.
And it's written in the legislation not to end right now for our type of the elementary basic aid district. So hopefully, again, you know, when I was hired, is trying to make this simple as much as possible. You know, you get the state financing. I hope, you know, our team has done that for you tonight. If you have any type of clarifying questions, please don't hesitate. You need to do battery shield. But hopefully, you know, we'll continue to do this piece. And we're updating more and more information for you for the Budget Advisory Committee over the next month. Ms. Sheila.
I'm going to do two for
you. You got two. You're double-fisted.
The question as you were talking, I realized, why is the... Maybe you answered this to Jeremy and I just missed it. Why is the secondary lower than the elementary in terms of what we project? Because the numbers in terms of the averages are so similar.
As far as what's the difference? I want to make sure the total amount of taxes.
Our annual increase projected for secondary is 1.5.
Right.
And elementary it's 2. And yet the average that we gain from it is so similar. Why is one lower than the other?
That's what we've used conservatively over the last couple of years. You know, if one thing we could do, if you said you wanted to go 2% flat across the board, you know, that's something that I would feel a lot more comfortable than raising it above 2. But all that does is, as Jeremy mentioned, that affects the calculator that's filled in. What happens is if as our taxes increase or decrease at the secondary level, it affects the state aid to get to the maximum. So it's never going to roll over or bubble over, kind of like elementary, because we're going to get to a maximum calculation and then basically stop at the secondary level, because that's really tied to attendance multiplied by the revenue.
Okay. Thank you.
Fair share reduction.
So with that, I'll turn it back over to the study session. I guess any questions from the public? Did you want to do that? We're done? Okay.
We're done. You get to adjourn.
Questions from the public?
That's not a general protocol, but we can open it up for questions from the public. Excellent.
Thank you all very much.
And just as a, even though we've got three questions from the public before the study session, if you all have questions, you can always come to us to get them answered.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're making up for a lot of time to be going away.
Faster than we told it.